Okay, today is Sunday, December 10th, 2017, and I say hello to my students sitting in front of me and to the many more listening around the world. I thank you for your nice comments on my Shiurim on Rav Henoch Fishman. I want to dedicate today's Shiur in honor of the President of the United States of America. I want to change his name slightly. This year is dedicated to Donald C. Trump. The C stands for Cyrus, Korash Melech Paras. And I want to remind everyone listening that I said last year when he was elected that he might yet be like Cyrus II. And I got some nice comments, although some people said he has to be Cyrus III because President Truman was called Cyrus II. Other people mocked my thoughts, laughed at me. And Baruch Hashem, today I can say the President of the United States, Donald C. Trump. I want to say something over from the Rav. In 1956, and once I touch upon this topic, I could continue to lecture for the next 7 years, Billy Guzma. Some of you know the OU's best-selling tapes ever were 9 hours recorded in this very room in the Kollel of a guy named Rakefet speaking about the Rav and religious Zionism. 1956, Mori Rebbe gave a talk on the 8th anniversary of the State of Israel. I was in the audience. I can actually show you a picture, and I can show you myself, and I can even show you the girl I would ultimately marry, who I met in Bnei Akiva, which is apropos to today's lecture. And the Rav spoke about the miracles of the declaration of the State of Israel. And the Rav made the comment, it could be that the whole UN was only created for this moment. Because every time the UN did something, there was machlokes, they never achieved Russia versus America. And when it came to the State of Israel, America was the first country to recognize the state and Russia was the third. I want to say it could very well be that Mr. Trump was only elected president for last Wednesday. And I don't want to minimize what he did. This was against all the advice of the State Department, of the Ministry of Defense in America, of the Reform Jews, some of the conservative Jews, of Lo Aleinu Jews who think they're Orthodox Jews, they're Poshim and Atzibo. I don't want to go further. And Yitz Rubin already knows I'm talking about Satma. They were against it. And with all that opposition, Mr. Trump listened to the good from Jewish advisors. And Yisaychah, he has a daughter-in-law. His daughter is Shomeret Shabbat. Go and dream that the President of the United States would have a daughter who is Shomeret Shabbat. And I know this from Eidut Nemana. I know it from my own students who have davened with her. She's Notelet Yodayim, she's Shomeret Shabbat, etc. So we dedicate the Shia today. Now on to work. I passed a milestone in life, and as I said last week, I'm Moda LaKadosh Baruch Hu that I've passed this milestone in health and ability. I want to thank Yeshiva University. Last Sunday after class, I went upstairs for what I thought would be a Haramat Kosat, as they say, what we call a Kiddush, a collation, and it turned out they made an entire catered Suda in my honor. Some of you were there. And I was very moved by the talks that were given by the heads of the institution here and all the big shots from America, Rav Heschel Schechter, the new president, my student, Rabbi Dr. Ari Berman, the new dean of the yeshiva, Rabbi Menachem Penna. And I want to be Moda LaKadosh Baruch Hu, and I want to say thank you publicly. However, more important is to say thank you to those who raised me, those who inspired me, those who created the little that I achieved these last number of generations. Last week we spoke about Rav Henoch Fishman. Today I want to speak about Rav Meir Kahana. Not everyone knew Rav Meir personally. He's well known, obviously. He has supporters, he has detractors. But I sort of knew Meir from day one. And let me talk about him and give you the real picture and show you his influence upon me. First of all, to put him into context, his years, 1932 to 1990. So that Meir was 5 years older than I am. And here we were kids growing up in the Bronx, I cannot tell you, I mentioned it last week, I mentioned it again, the Bronx was an absolute midbar as far as Jewish observance, over a million Jews. If what conclusion did we reach on Monday? I said 1% of a million, 0.1%, if they were Shomer Shabbos. I'm overstating the case. Now in the Bronx, all over, there were young people. This is the miracle of the rebirth. I spoke about it many times. Spoke about it last week as well. The Gemara in Nida, that the angel teaches the kid Torah, the Gemara Nida Dachlamed. And the question is obvious. If the angel touches you and you forget it all when you come into the world, why does the angel waste his time teaching you a Torah? But the answer is very powerful. I heard from Mori Rebbe of Soloveitchik. And it's the only answer you can give, that the Gemara is telling us that every Jew has the ability to become a Ben Torah. It's part of our physical, emotional, intellectual, psychological makeup. And here are these kids whose parents were assimilating. And I described my own home to you. And as I said last week, I'm not a Baal Tshuva. My generation, we're not Balei Tshuva. We grew up, the rabbi's sons were the only kids basically who came from homes that were Shomer Shabbos. And though half those kids were rebelling against their parents, you understand? To be a rabbi's son was not easy. I had classmates, rabbi's sons, they were Vilde Chayas. Some of them straightened out later in life. There was one, a medical doctor, and he went up, it has to be Vietnam, right? The 60s, of course, he got his degree. I got Smicha 61, so let's say he became an MD 62, 63. So I met him years later, and I said to him, Morty, I don't recognize you. You are Vilde Chaya in yeshiva. He said, Ani, if you would be in Vietnam, believe me that I cannot alive. I am a frum Jew today. Later, the Kloisenberger Rebbe grabbed him, and he was the Kloisenberger Rebbe's personal assistant and helped him build Laniato here. So the rabbi's sons were the only kids who came from Shomer Shabbos homes 99% of the time. But we were kids. We sought, we wanted, we longed for Kedusha here. You see last week, Rabbi Hanich Mishman didn't speak a word of English. And I got hit over the head upstairs when Rabbi Heschel Schechter spoke. You were there, Mark, remember? He says he reminded everyone about my wedding. And I felt like saying, Heshi, and your Yiddish is any better than mine? That's a brach in the Yiddish. He also wasn't the master of Yiddish. Here, Rav Fishman and a kid, Ani Roscoff, we interacted, it changed our lives. Certainly it changed my life. These kids, Shabbos came, you wanted Kedusha. And I have to be honest, I want to play a game. I have to be intellectually honest. You reach a certain age that the young man wants to meet some young women. Now, this is very, very important. If I have time, I'll come back to it later, because this is one of our big problems that we struggle with today. Very important. Boys and girls should learn to talk to each other, to respect each other. Underline the word respect. If you see what's going on today with Hollywood, if I had any influence, I would insist all American Jews should change their last name to McQuinn, to McDougal, to Smith, to whatever name, Goyim Gemurim, no one should have Weinstein, Goldstein, the Israel. You see what's going on now? One scandal after another. Ainu Yiddish Anam and Nachanandara. Change to Goyish names. But we kids, so it was partially Kedusha, and partially you wanted to meet girls. We were 14, 15. Kids walked from all over the Bronx to the Bnei Akiva Ken. It was called Mizracha. Why was it called Mizracha? West Bronx. In the East Bronx. In the West Bronx, there was Marava. You followed, or actually it was not the West Bronx so much as the West Side. It was the West Side. It was in Manhattan, actually. That was called Marava. In the East Bronx, so I had to walk, let's say, to get to Bnei Akiva, I had to walk at least a mile. Malka, my wife, to get to Bnei Akiva, they used to walk maybe 2 miles on Shabbat, but kids walked from all over. And we had a Bnei Akiva. Oh, what went on in that Bnei Akiva? I would say 70% of the kids who went there came in Aliyah. What's even more important, many couples came out of Bnei Akiva. I never heard of a divorce. Finally, I heard of my first divorce this last year. I'll tell you the story in 1 second. No divorces, no divorces. What dedication. They held the reunion of American North American Bnei Akiva. It must already be 10 years ago. They can never hold it again. They held it in Binyanei HaUmah. The children, the grandchildren, the great-grandchildren, Binyanei HaUmah couldn't hold the crowd. Thousands upon thousands upon thousands, all out of Bnei Akiva, North America. And from the Bronx, I could give you a list of who's who in Israel, all descendants from Bnei Akiva, North America. It was overwhelming. Divorce, the couples worked out, the covered all the ferret. The one divorce is a fascinating story and indicative of our times. I get an email to YU with a lot of lumbus to undermine the rabbinate that we have to tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu, your Torah is too strict, we have to change this, we have to change that. And I look at the name. So I call my brother, who lives here, who was in Bnei Akiva with me, hand in hand, the one that Rav Heschel spoke about from America, his chavruta. So I call Levi, and I say, Levi, I don't want to mention the name, look at this name. Wasn't he a Chaim Berlin boy from Brooklyn? He says, yeah, that's him. I said, what happened to him? So Levi told me the story. He was a drop younger than I am. He was between me and Levi. He lived in Levi's community in Petach Tikva. About 25 years ago, he became bigger than God. You know, you reach an age in life, very bright guy, very successful, rolling in money. Suddenly, Yiddishkeit is no good. His wife had to throw him out. His kids are all from all Hesder graduates. The only divorce I know of. I don't know of that. And that was the first one I ever heard of. So the system worked. Now, but let me go further. Two tremendous influences upon us that none of you growing up today can comprehend. One influence was Hitler, the Nazis, the Holocaust. So Seth is saying, what's the Rebbe carrying on? The Rebbe's a third generation American, right or wrong? But you don't realize, everyone around us, the yeshiva, Bnei Akiva, half the kids we know were survivors, and another third of the kids we know were immigrants who ran away in the late 30s. It was tangible. And I'll tell you one story. I write about this in Washington. And this story says it all. It doesn't need any explanation. Saturday night when Shabbos ends at 5:15, I have to tell you, at my age, it's very sad. Every Saturday night, my wife and I are being Menachem Avil. We made a list of all the Nichem Avil homes we've been in. It's a function of age. Unbelievable. So like last night, again, the Shabbos ended 5:15. Figured we'll go 7:30. We called, we have an almano who likes to go with us, who also wanted Lenachim Avil. I took the car, I picked them up. That's how we spend Saturday night. Lower Lane, it's a function of age. When you're young, Saturday night, Shabbos ends in New York, 5:30. Ah, so we used to have affairs with other branches of Bnei Akiva. So in the mid-50s, we had an affair, a get-together with Bnei Akiva in Crown Heights. This is Crown Heights when Lubavitch was yet small, and Rabbi Kanatovsky, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, Rabbi Baumel, also different. The Bava Rebbe was there already. So we take three trains to go. Yitzchak, I don't know if you can comprehend this, the subway system from the Bronx to Manhattan. Manhattan we changed to Brooklyn. We get to Crown Heights, Young Israel of Crown Heights, and we're having this big Bnei Akiva session. We have a madura They used flashlights. They couldn't make her. You know, in Israel, you sit. I've yet to be in a madurah. I'm living here 49 years. I've yet to be in a madurah. But we thought Israel, you sit around the bonfire, you sing songs, and we're sitting around a few hundred kids, Brooklyn kids, Bronx kids, and suddenly we're singing Ani Ma'amin. And in the middle of Ani Ma'amin, a young lady from Crown Heights named Tova, she lived right near her. Her husband taught with me in Michlala. He's no longer alive. She's not that well today. She lived in Bayit Bagan. Tova walks out in tears. So, you know, we're American kids. You don't have to be an American kid, but any kid in the world is going to ask, was ist getroffen? What happened here? You're singing Ani Ma'amin. So we asked, why did Tova walk out in tears? So a madrich from Brooklyn told us she's a survivor. All right, we knew that. Her English had a slight accent. Her father was the gabbai, the sexton, the shamus of the young Israel of Crown Heights. And two of her sisters perished in the camps, in the gas chambers. And after the war, they had eidut nemanah that the sisters went into the gas chambers singing Ani Ma'amin. So you can understand why she walked out when we were singing Ani Ma'amin. So you see, the Holocaust was tangible. We were American kids, correct? But it was tangible. If I look at my life, I can tell you with all honesty, I went on Aliyah because of the Holocaust. When the Mossad tapped me, I had a kesset. Anachnu yodim shata yodaya ichle lameid gemara. Ata muchane lameid gemara b'Moskva. Arye Kroll's phone call to me, May of 1980. An idiot would say yes. What are you, crazy? I want to go to communist Russia? I never had a problem with law. I never got a ticket for driving incorrectly. I said yes immediately. Part of it was I knew my wife was interested. She had heard others had gone. And the other part was the Holocaust. How can I say no? So, you see, that was one part of the surroundings. The other part, the state of Israel. The impact of November, Choftet November, 1947, Makid and Solanta, I mentioned this last week, and I can never forget, the teachers weren't that from. Who taught in yeshiva? Before the Shanghai crowd, the only one who taught in yeshiva basically was Lo Yitzlachnik. He couldn't make a living in America. People sold insurance, people tried to have stores, so with the inability to do well, they wound up teaching in their youth. They learned Gemara, they knew Chumash, they knew Hebrew. Many of them were all Zionists. So I remember the day of the vote in the UN, they had radios in Solanta, ancient radios. Everyone was gathered around the radio and the teachers were crying. And that sight, I can never forget. And here we have a state. And against all odds, I mean, you come in today, my daughter just got back from Florence, Tana. Tana and Danny were in Florence. Danny's been all over the world for the state of Israel. There are reasons why, which can't be said publicly, but Danny is Danny. But he had been to Florence years ago on official business, and he said to Tana, I want to show you a beautiful city with ancient statues, whatnot. My daughter got back. She's in a state of shock. She says, it's like a fourth world country. Worse than that, no one in Europe are having children. Nobody. Everyone has a dog. The Arabs are taking over Europe, plain and simple, because it's a democracy. When you have a democracy, Israel is... Ben-Gurion's turned it off in his grave. Ben-Gurion's biggest mistake was he gave the vote to everyone over 18. Here in Israel, you should only have a vote if you don't have a beard, you don't have payas, you don't wear a kippah, you don't observe Shabbos. Have a vote. Then you would have kept it the Mapai, the Avodah, what they were dreaming of. But it's a democracy. Any American Jew who criticizes Israel, I smack his face 50 times over. You idiot, come in Aliyah and vote in the election. What are you criticizing for? So the same thing in Europe. And here you have a state of Israel. Look how we were founded. 30% of the population, immigrants who survived Hitler with miracles, broken in spirit, broken in heart, broken in money. And another 40% of the population, Olim from Arab countries running away, were coming in from a primitive society suddenly into an Israeli society which was much more advanced, no money, impoverished. And look what we built here. And this was a tremendous inspiration, the state of Israel. Along this scene, with this background, Herbie, our Madrich is Meir Kahana. B'nai Akiva, the central office, sent people to every ken. And every Shabbos, Meir had to stay in a home in the East Bronx so he could be a Madrich. He later becomes the Rosh Ken, and yours truly is his assistant. Now, Meir's life appears very simple. I'm going to give you the key to it. I'm going to tell you the two incidents in Meir's life that give us Meir Kahana. And later I'll explain where I differ with him so that the fascists on the left won't criticize YU for putting this lecture up on YU Torah as they criticized my last review of the second volume of Meir's life written by his widow, by his wife, my good friend Libby. Meir had a normal life, it seems. His father was a rabbi in Brooklyn. Family came from Tzvat. His father, Yecheskel Charles Kahana, it was the typical shul in Brooklyn. Aryeh, you're going to find this very hard to believe. All the big shuls, almost none, had a mechitza. What they had was separate seating. No mechitza. Only the young Israel of Flatbush, had a mechitza. That was considered the frumest shul. Go and dream that today. That's considered the Eisbach shul. But that was considered the frumest shul. His father had a big shul and no mechitza. Father was a wonderful rabbi. Wasn't born in America. Married, I believe, Meir's mother, I believe, was born in America. She's perfect English, no trace of an accent. Wonderful people. Meir went to Flatbush. So many people went to Flatbush. Then Meir was in the first class of BTA. Now, it's not exactly the first class. What happened was Brooklyn Talmudical Academy, YU had the famous high school Talmudical Academy established in 1915, although technically it begins January 1916, established by my cousin, Rabbi Dr. Bernard Revel, the school I graduated from in 1955. They had a Brooklyn branch beginning in 45, but they began, Joseph, they began with two levels. There was one level of freshmen and another level of more advanced students, so that the first graduation was really in 48. But the first graduation that spent 4 years there was 1949, and Meir Kahana was one of the graduates. My neighbor, Sam Dershowitz, some of you may know my neighbor, Dr. Sam Dershowitz, he was Meir's classmate. Yitz Greenberg, the famous Irwin Greenberg, he was Meir's classmate. This was the class. Meir later goes on to get a degree from Brooklyn College, gets two masters, New York Law School, International Affairs, this is all from NYU, 1957, and all the time while he's in college and graduate school, he's learning in Mir Yeshiva. Now, in those days, the atmosphere was very, very different, and from all the yeshiva, practically everyone went to college. Mir Teira Vadas, Chaim Berlin, whatever advanced yeshiva that existed in America. It wasn't like YU. The animosity against YU is how they put the yeshiva and the college under one roof. That was the famous tshuva of Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, Baruch Ber Leibovich. We spoke about this. To put general studies with Torah studies under one roof is an absolute insult to the Torah. But you have to have a profession, so kids went to college. But Jacob, by day, they learned in yeshiva. You went to college 5 o'clock in the afternoon, 6 o'clock in the afternoon, summer sessions. So that was Meir. Everything here looks very normal, except one of the great incidents that influenced Meir, lo aleinu. 1938, his father's family in Tzfat had gone to a wedding in Tel Aviv. On the way back from the wedding to Tzfat, they were ambushed and murdered. And quite a few of Meir's relatives were killed in the terrorist attack. How old was Meir in 1938? Make the cheshbon, 5 or 6 years old, born in 32. Right or wrong, depends when his birthday was. No, let me tell you something. I'm raising great-grandchildren. My eldest today is 7. I have a whole slew of great-grandmani. Modela Kadosh Baruch Hu. You cannot believe how bright a kid already is at the age of 2. A 2-year-old great-grandson was in my house Friday. I was astounded how bright this kid is. What he understands. And by the way, my great-grandchildren are all geniuses. At the age of 2, they're rattling off in Hebrew what took me 50 years to learn. They're totally at home in Hebrew in the age of 2. They go so fast, I have to slow them down. Oh boy, all right, I pulled the wool over your eyes, Seth. Enjoy it. Let's come back here. A kid of 5, 6, you can imagine the impact that made on Meir. Part of it, you got to remember, we spoke about his father. His father was a chirutnik, a follower of Jabotinsky. When Jabotinsky visited America, one of the homes he stayed in was the home of Rabbi Charles Kahana. Meir was a kid and he saw this man with the vision, with the unbelievable oratorical ability. This put it together. I call it one influence. We'll see the other one in a few minutes. This forged Meir. And I have to tell you something. I'm here 49 years. I can give you a list, lo aleinu, of endless names of Talmidim of mine and children of Talmidim who were killed by terrorists. Hebron, Yerushalayim, Yehuda B'Shomron, let alone those killed in battle, those injured in battle. Don't have to elaborate. Very hard not to have anger within me. Very hard. Sometimes when I thought of Germany and all the testimony started coming out, because until the 70s, the survivors didn't talk about it. It was like a secret. Their attitude was, our children have to grow up normal. There's a beautiful documentary on Borough Park. What's it called? The People Apart, I believe. It came out about 20 years ago. A YU graduate, damn. Beautiful documentary. It won many awards. It's available. It's online. It's on the Borough Park community. So he interviews the children of Borough Park Jews. And we know Borough Park. I actually knew this woman. I know the store. It's a woman dress store. My wife has shopped there. And this lady says, we never could say no to our parents because we knew what they went through. She says, my children say no to me. It's a very profound thought. We grew up, we could never say no. We never knew details. They never spoke about it. But we knew that they were hiding a big secret from us. So you see, I can understand Maya's feelings. At times I would say to my grandchildren, who seek out my opinion, your own children. It takes them many years to realize, wow, my father really has good opinions or intelligent opinions, but your grandchildren know from day one. So I always say, you know, I'd like to get into a plane and drop a few atom bombs on Germany. Kel nekomot Hashem. And then I say to them, but tell me, do I have a right to do that? Just think for a minute how many Germans there were, Italians, Dutch people, Arabs, who saved Jewish lives. You understand? You can't generalize. You have to be able to differentiate. It can't be enmity. I understand Meir, but on this point I differ with him. Later in life he would express, no, I know from Hebron in 29, it's the only article I ever wrote that I couldn't find anyone to publish it. Jewish Action turned me down. It's the 1960s, said it's too gruesome, too gruesome. Today already everyone knows the details, but I know from my research, 29 in Hebron, that there were people who hid Jews in their basement. I know someone I knew from Newark yet, when I was rabbi in Maplewood, 62 to 69, was just his first yard site. So they told the story of his life, the Billet family, Moshe Billet, that had come in Aliyah a little after us. Three families went back to Italy a few years ago. They were presented with Hasidei Umat Olam. These Italians risked their lives to save these Jewish families. Today, it's not that you just saved three little families. Today, you put together the three families, hundreds of descendants, all living in Israel. All from, by the way. And the Israeli ambassador, and my daughter was just in Poland. This is, which daughter was it? No, I think it was Tainer a few months ago. Or no, it may have been my middle daughter was just in Poland. And she said there was a ceremony there, a family that risked their lives to save Jews, and the cover they gave the Israeli ambassador. So you see, I understand that it's a traumatic experience, but you have to rise above it. But Meir, this influenced him. Something else about Meir. Very charismatic. You've all had many teachers during your life. Some teachers had tremendous knowledge, but you would fall asleep during the lecture. That was for sure. You have other teachers. You take the Rav, Moriah Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik. When he gave a shiur, you couldn't fall asleep. You were alive. And the best moments were when he took off his glasses. There are pictures of him like this. That's when he was not looking at the text, and he was telling a story, recollecting, revealing his past. Those were the most precious moments. Then when he put on the glasses, back to the text. He would give major Sherman public 4.5 hours. Unbelievable. Read every word. But he would read it with passion. Kept you alive, awake. Meir, he stuttered. But when he spoke, there was fire in his eyes. And I read a description of Meir. This comes from the first volume on Meir's life by his widow, Libby. I was at their engagement party. You see how far back we go? I'll let you in on a secret. Libby wasn't even 18 years of age at the engagement party. She was a sweetheart. She was my between me and my brother. And Baruch Hashem, she turned 18 by the wedding a few months later. Otherwise, they would need a judge's order to allow them to get married. And in the first volume on page 28, this is Nomi Klass Mauer. Also brings back many memories for me. Nomi Mauer, unfortunately, did not come in Aliyah. There's part of the family in Aliyah. Her children are here. The publisher, he's a Mauer. And this is Nomi Klass Mauer, and she describes Meir, the deep impression he made on her. There was fire in his eyes, and there was a magnetism about him. He had a beautiful voice. Many of the songs he taught us were about Israel, and I still sing some of them today. When he spoke about Israel, There was magic in the room. He was captivating. You could hear a pin drop during his stories. And I always felt that if it wasn't Shabbat, and he told us to follow him to Israel at the conclusion of a story, we'd all get up and go after him. And you see, this was Meir. Magic. Charisma. Ugh. Then something happened in his life. This is the second incident. And this incident, in my opinion, and I have to give the New York Times credit, Ani Rothkopf / Aaron Rakefet reached this conclusion back in 1970-71. After Meir died, the New York Times did investigative reporting, and I couldn't believe it. It's just like they listened to my class in BMT, word by word, reached the same conclusion. But let me tell you the story. Meir grows up. You can't be a Madrich in B'nai Akiva forever. Can't be a Rosh Ken forever. You have to grow up. Graduates. Goes into the world. 1958. He becomes rabbi of a new community. Howard Beach Jewish Center. Howard Beach. You've heard of it? It's part of Brooklyn, am I right?
Queens.
Border. It's on the border, okay? I know it's near Brooklyn, but you say it's technically in Queens, fine. New community. They started building their massive buildings, and a shul opens. And they hire Meir as rabbi. And this shul was a typical so-called traditional shul of the era, no mechitza. And Meir comes in as rabbi, and that same charisma that he had in B'nai Akiva now transfers to the shul, and kids start following him. Come home, kashrut. Come home, Shabbat. And you know, people are murmuring against the old story with the rabbi in America. The rabbi is speaking. I was in the rabbinate. Believe me, I know the rabbinate well. I was in it, for better or for worse. I had my first shteller. I'm lucky I'm around that I survived. The second shteller, I built the new shul. I know what it's about and how you struggle. And people are murmuring against Meir's, the rabbi preaching. Rabbi, what are you talking about? Shabbat, kashrut, tarat mishpacha. What should I talk about? Yiddishkeit. No, Yiddishkeit. Then Meir made a tragic mistake. Thursday night, the middle of the winter, and this has to be 59, I would say. In Washington, I think I give you the exact date. He decides to put up a machitza on his own Saturday night, for Thursday night, I should say, with a group of kids helping him. He puts a machitza up in the shul. The balabatim come in Friday night, and they are furious. They're going berserk. The rabbi, the chutzpah, a machitza? What are we? Old-fashioned, primitive? That Monday night, there was an emergency meeting. I remember it vividly. Tremendous snow. And yet the balabatim came out and threw out Meir Kahana. A rabbi like this, we don't want. For the sake of historical accuracy, I have to tell you some of the very balabatim who threw out Meir later became his most devoted disciples, coming in Aliyah. They have banim uvnei banim, oskim b'torah mitzvot, b'yehuda v'shomram gam kein. But this is before they came back and understood what Torah is about. They threw out Meir. I remember my brother and I, we loved Meir. We were following. We were so proud. He became a rabbi, new community, Howard Beach. We couldn't believe it. And this incident had a tremendous impact on Meir. It's the second great influence on his life. And the New York Times got it right. Unless they were listening to a tape of my shiur in BMT, but they got it right. You see, from that incident on, to begin with, a person who's bright, a person who's successful, a person who's charismatic. So you start to think you know more than anyone else. You know, this is one of the big problems in democracy. Everyone has a vote. No, what do you mean everyone has a vote? Drug addicts, prostitutes, thieves. Everyone has one vote. But that's a democracy. After seeing communist Russia, I'd rather have the problems of democracy than not have a democracy. Ad biyat Mashiach tzidkenu. But it wasn't just that. Now Meir, who always felt he knew a little bit more than anyone else, understand? You were upset with the Rav. You didn't see the Rav when he got angry. You're taking a genius and you're putting him into a classroom with normal American kids. The Rav, he was a terror in the 50s, the 40s, the 50s. Lo aleinu, tragedy had its effect upon him. The Talmidim out of the 70s, they didn't know the Rav. They knew an old man, a gentle man who tolerated nonsense. We, when we faced the Rav, oh boy, did you have to be careful. And if you said something, he once called me a reform rabbi. You don't believe me? I played it in class in the 50s. I said a svara. What are you, a reform rabbi? It's like, what is that? And the whole class is laughing. I'm not mad at the Rav. I'm mad at the class. You're laughing. Why didn't you defend me? But okay. The mayor. And you see, that gave him the inability to be a team player. This is crucial to understanding Meir. My dear students, as bright as we are, as smart as we are, as successful as we are, none of us are God. I grew up in a world, a lot of Eluim I knew in my time, a lot of giants of Torah. No one knew it all. And no one always made the right decisions. Consulting is much better. A Sanhedrin runs by majority vote. An amazing thought. You're part of a system. You must consult. Meir, from that point on, that ability was beyond him. And I'll show you how it affects his life. And I cried when this happened because I saw through it. I cry until today. In my humble opinion, Meir Kahana would have been Prime Minister of the State of Israel. When he came in Aliyah, Menachem Begin offered him a safe seat on the Gachal ticket. Gush Kairut Liberalium. You remember that, Seth? That's before the Likud. Offered him a safe, you know what I mean by a safe seat? I once got a call from Chaim Druckmann, Chaim, who I know yet, he was Shliach B'nai Akiva to America. He came into the Rav Shir, I know him from the mid-50s on. He wanted me to run for the Knesset, offered me a safe seat on, don't ask. I turned him down on the spot. I said, Chaim, ulay ata yachol lasot et zeh, aval ani lo yachol azov et shulchan sheli ulelamed et b'nei Yisrael. L'fizeh HaKadosh Baruch Hu bara oteya. I knew I couldn't leave teaching. I was offered so many things. I would have been world famous today. You have no idea what I was offered. The money I would have had. I would have never had to worry about water and then bread, you understand? But I knew what I was cut out for. He offered Meir a safe seat. Now imagine, you could go on to the Knesset and later you become a minister and you have charisma. And even though Meir had an American accent in his English, so what? His accent was not as bad as Golda Meir. You understand? When Golda Meir was prime minister, it was a pleasure. Her accent was worse than mine. Take my word for it. He could have become prime minister. But you see, if you think you know it all, of course, then you can't cooperate. Again, you're going to be angry at that Begin. He made this compromise. This was wrong. That was wrong. You're friendly with these liberalim. Who the heck are they? What do they think? Where are they coming from? That event in Howard Beach was tragic. Now, here I have to tell you something. This, what happened with Meir, to a certain degree saved my life. Why? We were watching. We were so close to Meir. And we were talking. And a year later, I entered the rabbinate, a young kid of 23. I got killed. Read Washington. It's not for now. Could have broken me. And I remember saying to myself time after time, I can't let what happened to Meir happen to me. I gotta rebound. And I rebounded. Now, 50, 60 years later, I look back and I'm angry because I was a kid of 23, these balabatim, with the fight that went on, re-elected. Charlie Lieberman became famous. I told you more than once. It was a vote of 9-7 re-electing me rabbi. Professor Liebman, Zichrono Livracha's first article that made him world famous was a sociological study of orthodoxy in the United States, early 60s. Look at the case story that's appendixed, and where it says young rabbi, cross out young rabbi, and write Aaron Rothkopf. He became famous. He analyzed who voted for me and who voted. It was an ingenious article. But I saw what happened to Meir. And you know what happened to Meir afterwards? He sold newspapers, took a newspaper out, lived in Queens, lived in Bayside, sold newspapers, and Libby writes about it. My brother and I were crying, Meir Kahana delivering newspapers, and Libby wrote it was fabulous. He delivered newspapers, started work at 4 o'clock in the morning, collected the papers, went on his route, got home by 10, went to Meir Yeshiva, and could continue learning. Meir, did you have him as a teacher, Seth?
My brother and sister did.
I had so many students who had him as a teacher. But you see, Meir, he taught in Queens, in what was it called?
Yeshiva High School of Queens.
Yeshiva High School of Queens, not Central Queens?
Central Queens is the elementary school.
The elementary school.
And the high school.
And the high school had more kids because it was a high school. He taught in the high school. He taught you, what did he teach? Civics, Jewish history.
He taught the Tanakh.
Tanakh.
He taught Hashkafah.
Hashkafah. Yeah. I know, but they had him for history or something.
And also history. Also history.
History. Correct. I remember my students telling me, imagine that, the Meir Kahana, the teacher, had to make a living, and he wrote for the Jewish press. In the 60s.
Late 60s.
Now, while this was happening, he organizes the Jewish Defense League. And here I have to tell you, he coins the slogan that, very powerful, many of my students, I got them in BMT, these kids were Kahanniks, bodyguards. You're looking at Seth Sackett. Do you know that Seth once cut my class in BMT to go to a demonstration for Meir? And you know what happened when he came back? I said, you are demonstrating. Who gives you the right? You don't live here. I can demonstrate. I have to pay with my blood. I'm in the army. I'm raising children here. But you American, I said, I'm putting a zero down next to your name. When you come in Aliyah, you call me and I'll erase the zero. P.S. The day he came in Aliyah, he called me and that imaginary zero disappeared very quickly. And that is an absolute true story. He organized the JDL. And here it's Meir, and I don't want to go into all the details, you understand, standing with the baseball bats, protecting the Jews, the neighborhoods, and a lot of people, you can be pro-Kahana, you can be anti-Kahana. But I want to just tell you one story, B'didi Havi Uvda, it happened to me. In 1977, when I went in Aliyah, I never thought I would see America again. My wife and I went, it was after the Six-Day War, two kids coming here with no, we had the little money we had, $13,500, that was equity we built up with the home we owned in Maplewood, New Jersey. With that 13.5, in Rehov Rav Chaim Berlin 18, we left with idealism. We're never going to see America again. 1977, I had just finished basic training, and I was in the army, and I was in the teaching, and BMT, Gold, Michlala, and the Kolda didn't exist yet, and the Israeli government sends me back to address the Rabbinical Council of America and some other venues where I spoke. Fine. I'm now staying with my parents in the Bronx for Shabbos. My parents had moved from where we grew up in the East Bronx. It was impossible to live there anymore. Vanity of Bonfires, the famous book by what's-his-name, Wolf, bestseller, How the Bronx Burned Down. And they're now living in Pelham Parkway, which is the next step before Riverdale, where the Jews live today. So here I am in Pelham Parkway, and I'm going to the bank on Friday morning, and there's a line in the bank, and I'm standing there minding my business, and Zwei Yiddish Frauen, two Jewish women, maybe they were survivors, speaking Yiddish to each other. They were my age, what I am today, so I was a kid compared to them, and I couldn't believe my ears. They were talking about Meir Kahana. Why did he go in Aliyah? Why did he leave us? Mindafim do, we need him here. He protected us. And I tell you, I came back to Israel and I told my students, I never knew the impact of Meir till I heard those two women speaking. So JDL did what it did. There were good moments, there were bad moments, but that takes us to the Russian issue. The Russian issue, if you read all the books that are coming out today, and many have come out on the Russian miracle of the rebirth of the Russian Jewish community, you've heard me say more than one second only to the declaration of the State of Israel and the formation of the IDF, Tzahal, is the great miracle of a community that was lost, that is waking up. If you read the books, Meir is totally dismissed. No one gives him any credit. Meir was the first one to raise the issue in the public thoroughfare. Already as early as mid-50s, Meir was screaming about Russian Jewry. First time I ever heard of it was from Meir. In the 60s already, JDL starts to follow Russian diplomats, to harass them, to threaten, to shoot them, if you recall what went on. And Meir is outside the main body of Russian activists. By the mid-60s already, you have the New York Conference, the National Conference, the Long Island Conference on Soviet Jewry. Meir gives birth to an organization, JSS, the Jewish Student Struggle for Soviet Jewry. That's the organization that functions outside the general context. Meir did a lot. One incident, of course, caused a tremendous counter-reaction, and according to Libby and Meir's biography that she wrote, and it's a very good scholarly biography, there is little prejudice there. In other words, when you write about your husband or you write about your relative, people will suspect you'll be prejudiced. She gives an honest description of Meir. You recall Sal Hurak, recognize the name? This was a Jewish, he brought performers to the New York area, and he brought in Russian performers, well, it was the Bolshoi, to perform, and Meir, their office was firebombed by some member of JDL, and the secretary died as a result. She was Jewish too. And of course, that caused a tremendous counter-reaction. And according to Libby, from that point on, Meir gave up these violent acts that could lead to death of an innocent bystander. All right. Did Meir accomplish? Didn't he accomplish? I want to tell you a true story. 1989, our last visit to Russia under the communists. I always thought it would be our last visit altogether, but we were there again this past June. 1989, we come to Leningrad. 1989 was a crucial year. The Iron Curtain was up, technically, but there were holes in the Iron Curtain. And when we got to Leningrad, a lot of refusnikim came out to meet us to hear the lectures, and there was more public turmoil. You could see in the atmosphere that people were not as afraid as they were when we were there earlier. In the Great Synagogue in Moscow, I actually saw a sign up in the shtibel, if you want to learn Hebrew, and it gave you a phone number to contact. I have a picture of it. It was unbelievable to see something like that. And in Leningrad, one of the people that came to see us was Naftali Beyatsky, a refusenik from Leningrad. And I have a picture of him. It's a colored picture in Washington. Came to see us. I have a picture here in Xerox, it doesn't do justice. You have to see the original. Came to see us, and he said, "I'm bringing my most precious possession." Right? He pulls it out, puts it in his pocket, and watch, his most precious possession sticking out of his pocket was a colored picture of Meir Kahana from the election campaign to the Knesset, which was smuggled into Russia. So I have to tell you, once again, that little story, which can be multiplied 100 times over, 1,000 times over, maybe even 10,000 times over, may have had an impact. You don't know what it did for the Jews in Russia under the communist suffering when people spoke up in America, "We're going to hound the ambassador, we're going to hound the consul, we're going to hound the Russians in America, we're going to follow them, and if they put one more Jew into Siberia, we're going to blow them up, we're going to shoot them." All right, a lot of it was talk, but it had an impact. It gave them succor, it gave them encouragement. So I hope some of the people who write the history of the Russian liberation movement give Meir a little credit. You can be critical, you can differ, but give credit where credit is due. And that story, that picture left an impact that I, till today, when I tell it to people and I show the picture, they start to understand. It's not black and white. Don't be that critical, and don't push him out of the picture. The JSS, the Jewish Students for Soviet Jewry, they were always outside the consensus. On the other hand, what they did, they made the issue real. Every person visiting Russia, the Mossad's tremendous operation that went throughout the world, people came back with pictures of refusnikim. They published those pictures. Every month there was another bulletin from JSS. Do you remember this? Do you, anyone remember? I have copies in my office, I have a whole file there. It became real, it became tangible. When you talk about Jews in Russia, all right, it doesn't mean that much if you see a picture and suddenly you see, wow, he doesn't look any different than I do. He's my cousin, he's my brother. It's real, she's my sister. It's tangible. This was all an offshoot from JDL, from Meir Kahana. Malcolm Holmlein was involved in the New York Council for Soviet Jewry, the official one, but Malcolm certainly was helpful to JSS.
The establishment.
That was the establishment, exactly.
Is that the same as
SSSJ? SSSJ, that's what I'm talking about.
Student struggle for Soviet.
Thanks for correcting me, I inverted it. Student struggle for Soviet, SSSJ. Exactly, you hit the nail on the head. What was his name?
Glenn Richter,
correct. He was the man that ran it single-handedly, total devotion. You know where it functioned out of? If my memory's correct, the young Israel of the West Side, upstairs in their classrooms, which you no longer had a Talmud Torah, he had a number of classrooms that turned into offices for SSSJ. But you see, that was the fallout. They went against the establishment. That was Mayor. He, JDL, Soviet Jewry. But two incidents, don't forget, the massacre in 38 and Howard Beach in 58, 59. That, in my opinion, marred Mayer's personality. Yes, Yitzchak?
Was it 38 or 28?
38. Mayer was alive. Mayer was 6 years old. 29 was the Hebron massacre. Now, let me go one step further. The early 70s already, Mayer feels guilty. All his friends from B'nai Akiva are in Israel. Ani Rothkopf is in Israel. Levi Rothkopf is in Israel. Go right down the line. Time to come in Aliyah. And all you know, Mayer comes in Aliyah. He goes back to America. At times he has legal problems. He sits in jail in America for a few months. He sits in jail in Israel. You'll see all the details in Libby's book, the second volume. We lived it. We saw it. But Mayer is here, and he organizes a political party. Kach. Rak Kach. And Mayer uncovers what will be followed afterwards, revolutionizes Israeli society, and it here until today. Either you use the word, it's here in success and has done wonders, or we suffer from it until today. Now, what Mayer discovered is very simple. The Sephardic Jews came in the late 40s, early 50s. Hundreds of thousands poured in, refugees. Nothing in their hand but traditional feeling, kissing the ground when they got off the planes, the magic carpet. And of course, you know the counter-reaction here, Ben-Gurion and his cohorts, we will create a new Jew out of them. We don't need religion, Zionism, socialism. We will normalize. No one will hate us anymore. A nation among the nations. Rip out of the Torah, the Pasuk, Am Levadad Yishkon. It has no credibility today. You all know what went on. No secrets. One generation went by. A second generation went by. And here you have the Sephardim. That traditional feeling remains. They're angry at the establishment. They need a leader. And Mayer, just as he was in B'nai Akiva in the Bronx, becomes a fountainhead of inspiration for the masses of the Sephardic youth growing up in Israel. And this is his strength. He's later elected to the Knesset. Who's voting for him? I didn't vote for him. I always voted Mizrahi. Ah, my wife voted for him. Time after time. So I said, no, you got to be realistic. We can't have everything our way. At least Mizrahi has a chance of influencing. Even if Mayer gets in, he's won. The Sephardic youth. And here let me share a beautiful story with you that says it all. Early 80s, this is the campaign where he's finally elected. Friends of ours come in from America. I have to say I later They later come in Aliyah, a direct influence of Malka and Aaron Rakefet. They have a big family here, two families, one here and one in America. It's a split family. So they come in, and they invite us out for supper one evening. But they make a condition, we have to go to a rally and hear Meir speak. And this is in Romema, in a hall there. I can show you the hall. It still exists until today. The memorials for Meir are held there. Do you know the name of the hall? Maybe give you an exact... What's it called? Heichal David. Correct, correct. So we go to Heichal David. Malka is all excited. And hundreds of people there. The place is packed. And Meir, Machayyeh HaNes HaZeh, is the way he ends off. The elections were a day or two later, and he's so powerful, and they're screaming and happy. And afterwards, he's mobbed, and I come over with Malka, standing on the side, and I say, Meir, immediately 50 people jump on me. Maze Meir, Harav Meir, Maze, come on. And Meir saw me, and he says, Tazovato, hu chaver sheli. Thank God he saved me. But Yitzchak, Rabbi Reuben, who discovered this power and turned it into an institution that at one time thrived, it still strives, and because of the situation here in the Knesset, it runs the country today. Shas. Exactly. The fallout. What Meir discovered. You follow me also? You follow me, Aryeh? What Meir discovered, Shas later takes in the mid-80s, turns it into the Sephardic powerhouse. And until today, Misrad HaPnim, the rabbinate, the Dayanim, Aryeh Deri. People love him, kiss him, people throw darts at his picture. Aryeh Deri, there's no more controversial figure, although with all the scandals going on now, we're headed for some big controversial figures, if I'm to believe the newspapers. Again, you got to worry about fake news, but I believe that not all the papers can all tell lies. Some of it has to be true, as we will find out.
The price is true.
But we'll see, we'll see. But you see, they discovered this concept. Shas, Sfadim, Ashkenazic dogs, you tortured us, you put us down. We have strength, we have power. This is a democracy. The Ashkenazic card, it's called. Oh, Derry's a master. When to raise it, when to put it aside. Even today, if you look at the websites this morning, this issue is right there. And Meir was the first one to pick up on it. And then we come to the point which, if you look back, I look back in anger. The second time around, Meir was so successful. This is now the mid-80s, the first election, I believe, was 82 when he became a... 84 when he became a Chabad Council. So this is the 88 elections. And Meir was so successful. And here, this election, the polls show he'll have 3, 4, 5 seats in the parliament. And the parliament outlawed Meir's party. And 12 seats.
Mariv.
12 seats in the Knesset. Unbelievable. Very, very frightening. And they outlawed his party. And this was tragic. Because you have parties in the Knesset, even at that time, that called for the destruction of the State of Israel. Arabs were allowed to say what they want. And here, Meir, don't have to agree with him, but he has support. It's a democracy. Let it be expressed. Excuse me?
Where was the bagatz?
Please, let's not get involved. We all know what's going on. And chaver may be chaver, they understand. The bagatz, God have mercy at their decisions over the years. Although I hope it'll get better now. They're more from people than ever on the bagatz. And if you saw Judge Meltzer, how he went crazy with Beit Shemesh, where they put up signs, men on one street, women on another street, and he said, I'm giving the mayor till Sunday, if not he goes to jail. I don't care if half the police force has to come to enforce it, to take down the signs. So there's a lot of criticism. By the way, I agree with the judge, don't misunderstand me. But he's very, very sharp. You know what the name Meltzer represents? One of the greatest Torah families in modern Jewish history. He's a member of Rabbi Zalman Meltzer's family. You should know his kids are all Hasda graduates. His wife is a Shomeret Shabbos 100%. But he was raised in that world, and boy, is he angry today. So I hope with the future things will get better. But this was a tragedy. And then within 2 years came the assassination. And I can never forget that as long as I live. By then I was working for Soviet Jewry full-time around the clock. And I had just arrived in America. It was on a Sunday, if I'm not mistaken. I had just arrived that day and I went to sleep early. And my hostess woke me up at about 10 o'clock. Aaron, wake up. Mayer was just assassinated. He was assassinated a few blocks from where I was staying on the Upper East Side. And then the funeral, I was at the funeral in New York, was from your grandfather's shul. Many shuls wouldn't touch it. Meya Muksa Machmat Mios. And from your grandfather, Rabbi Bounce, Young Israel, what was called Flatbush, Young Israel of Ocean Parkway. That's where the funeral began, and I missed the funeral here. My children were at the funeral here. So far, a few words about Meir. Give me 1 second. Baruch atah Adonai Melech Haolam,
she'akol nihyeh
bedvar
Olam. Amen. Just a quick question. What was the connection between Meir Kahana and Begin? And you really think that Meir Kahana had more of an impact than Begin, than changing the political...
Meir Kahana, had he been elected to the Knesset and had time developed, he might have been the successor to Menachem Begin. I think he was much younger. Meir Kahana today, if he were alive, would be 85. Okay? So there were golden years where he could have become the prime minister.
Did Begin see him as an ally?
Absolutely. He offered him a safe seat in the Gachal ticket. What does that tell you? Gula Kohn, Menachem Begin. Those were the big names then. And he turned them down. He couldn't cooperate. But let me make one crucial, important point. Yes, you ought to get these books. It's fascinating. For someone who knew Meir, she details his life at least in the Knesset. She doesn't reach the Knesset. It's 2 volumes. Another volume should cover the Knesset and Lo Aleinu, the end and the afterthought. Let me just put it all together and then I want to make a very important point. Meir was a big influence in my life, as you can see. At one point, his father dies, he was sitting Shiva, and Talmidim from BMT went to visit him. And this was probably, I would say, the late 70s. It can be checked out when Charles Kahana died. And these kids really didn't know Meir, but there was a chance for Nachem Avel and to meet a famous figure. So Meir asked them, where are you studying? They tell him, BMT. And who's your Rebbe? And the kids right away say, oh, we have a Rabbi Rakefet, Meir says. I made him into a Zionist. Ask him. He's only there because of me. And the kids came back and asked me. I said, absolutely. And Meir had a big impact. He put together the Holocaust and the rebirth of Israel. The Never Again found such a reception of warmth and understanding and dedication and commitment. Myself, my brother, many, many others. My wife, very crucial figure. Sadly, when you look back, that Howard Beach incident, it had a big impact on him. You go to the massacre, and you go to Howard Beach, and you understand Meir's personality. But I want to go one step further. I'll tell you where I think he made the biggest mistake. And here we have to deal with the reality of who we are, where we live, and what's happening at this moment in time. We Jews are very opinionated. What's even worse, the more learned we are, the more opinionated we are. Believe me, I could bore you with my opinions and convince you I'm 100% correct on every thought I have. Some of you have heard my Haskapah Shurim, the 10 years I devoted to questions my students asked me. I'm not ashamed of those Shurim. At the end, I dealt with Das Torah, and I have letters from people from the Haredi world who said these are the most fabulous Shurim we ever heard on Das Torah. All right. I have my opinions. 100%. I praise the President of the United States. Not all the Haredim in Israel praise the President. But we always have to remember there are other opinions out there. Life has taught me never to go with the concept you know it all and everyone else is wrong. And the only way we can survive as Jews with the reality of where we're at today with Reb Shmuel Orbach and the Bnei Brak Rabbanim and the Hasidish Rabbeim and the wonderful religious Zionist community and also tremendous differentiation, Merkaz Harav, to what's going on in Har Mar, the other side of Jerusalem. Big splits in our community. As my grandson taught me, three different elements in the Mizrahi element. Chadalim, Haredim Datiyim Leumim, Tzionim Datiyim like we are, and Tzionim Datiyim light, my grandson. And then I see in the newspapers, I see they're using the same concepts. We have to work within the system. We can't achieve everything we want, but we can achieve part of it. But we have to do it b'shalom u'v'shalva. My father, Zichron Levracha, used to say, and my parents at the end, I came 69, we brought my brother in 73. My brother was already operating on soldiers. He had to sign waivers because he didn't yet have a license. He was just here a few weeks, but he was world famous up for eye surgeon. In the Yom Kippur War already, he was operating on soldiers. And then we brought my parents in 77. So my father lived here a few years. My mother lived here many years. My father died in 80. And my father used to say, if the Arabs were smart, they would make peace with us. And the minute they make peace, we'd pull each other apart so they could walk in and take the country over. And there's a lot of truth to this. It's not something to be dismissed lightly. We always have to work within the system. And my best example, which sadly is no longer relevant, is Meir's family. Meir came in Aliyah. His brother Nachman came before him. Nachman was the younger brother. Rav Nachman Kahana was in my shevet in Bnei Akiva. I know Nachman from the year one. Rav Meir's father used to say, I have two sons. One is Meimenuchat, that's Nachman, wrote on Tosfot, the whole series, Meimenuchat. And the other one is Meimeriba, that's Meir. So you see, you work outside the system, you see what happens, so the system spat you out, which was all wrong. Today it couldn't happen. It's a different Knesset today. I have people in the Knesset who are more extreme than Meir, take my word for it. And I vote for them. They're part of the Bennett's party. I vote for them with glee, with joy. My wife and I vote the same party. It's a miracle. And Nachman, the Rav of Young Israel of the Old City, everyone loves Nachman, following all over the world. Nachman has a son, Mordechai. Mordechai Kahana grew up within the system. He reached the rank of Brigadier General. And I have to tell you, that's against all odds, because he had the last name Kahana. And I remember when he went up to a Luftmischneh to Colonel, big interviews with him in the newspapers. You're a Kahana. How do you feel about your uncle? And he said, my politics is a private matter, but in the army, I'm part of the chain of command. I take orders and I give orders. Unfortunately, he left the army now. We had no mazel. There were two brigadier generals who were slated to become major generals. One I don't even want to talk about. You understand the type of scandal. Me too. I hinted it. And the other one, Nachman, it turns out he was, according to the newspapers, but he resigned. So evidently it's true. He kept a Frigidaire and a washing machine and a dryer. It's Ishtuyot. But they are, and I don't want to say this through man because he resigned. He didn't fight it. He resigned. But there is another kippah wearing individual, now became a Luftwaffe Merkaz. So I hope. We have real problems. There's no question the left is fighting religion tooth and nail. But ultimately, they will lose, just as Europe will become Muslim and they'll be beheading people in Trafalgar Square on Friday midday after the services are over. Guts are up hitting what's going to happen there. Israel is changing and changing in the right direction. But you have to work within the system. And Mayo, he was caught smuggling arms in here. You can't do that. You have to be, because if we do that, we'll kill each other. Each one will say, we're right, you're wrong, I know truth, the Chabshas and Paiskim, I can prove it over 1,000 ways. We're Jews. I had Talmidim who were angry at Rabbaron Lichtenstein. I looked at them, he said, he's too left for us. I said, Rabbaron is a gadol tzaddik. He has his own opinion, but it doesn't mean you don't go and listen to his shayurim. You're entitled to your opinion. We're Talmidim of the Rav. Das Torah, the way the Aguda world understands it, doesn't ring a bell with us. Lehefech, we hold it to be anti-Torah. But this, to me, is very important. Finally, on a personal level, let me tell you, Rav Meir and Libby had 4 children. You should know that I interacted with all 4. His daughters were my own students, Michlala. Tzipora, who just died, it breaks my heart, young lady in her late 50s. Tzipora was a sweetheart. The early 70s, I had a kid in BMT named Mark Kaplan. Many years later, I was in Beverly Hills, and after 2 weeks or 3 weeks of lecturing, they made a big catered farewell party for me on the lawn in Beverly Hills, Lo Chaser Lahem Kesef. And on that lawn, one of the sponsors got up to speak, and he said, Harav Rakefet, I want you to know, on this lawn you were cursed and maledicted 20 years ago. And today we thank you and praise you. And I didn't know what the heck he was talking about. And then he explained himself. He was the father of Mark Kaplan. I influenced Mark. He went in Aliyah, never came back. We were so angry with you. And today we are so proud of Rabbi Moshe Kaplan, the son-in-law of Rav Meir Kahana, married to Tzipora. And I tell you, I never heard better words. We maledicted you, and today we praise you. And lo aleinu, when Moshe was sitting shiva, when Mark would call my house with a question, he would say, my daughters would ask, who's speaking? Moshe Kaplan. And they would say, get out of here, you're Mark the Snark Kaplan. What Moshe? He was sitting shiva, and I came, and he told everyone, he sits me next to him, the Ashegets and all these bearded gentlemen, one with a bigger beard than the other, coming in, and Mark, and among them, Lamdanim, Mufakim, and he says, this is the Rebbe you influence. That's one family. Tova should live and be well. She was my student in Michlala as well, a sweetheart. Such a compliment to their mother. I don't want to say to their father, because when you raise children and the father's always in the public limelight, give the mother the credit. What a sweetheart. Baruch Kahana, their son, all right, I had a daughter, I had a student who made the front page of Maariv Erev Shabbos some point in the 70s. There was a headline, Ben Nolad LeMishpachat Vakhil. The Vakhil family had a son. A Moroccan family down south. Something like 13, 14 girls, one after another. Finally, a son was born. It made the headlines in Maariv, in Yediyot. Maariv then was a major newspaper. This, one of the girls, Nitza Vakil. This lady from a background, Moroccans, came to Israel. Studied me in Michlala. A genius. Gets a PhD, I believe, in biology. You can correct me if it's not my biology. I have problems. I have a granddaughter getting a PhD in chemistry. I'm always, and then I have another one getting in physics. She got in biology. She's married to Baruch. Baruch was in law school with my daughter Ta'ena. So when I came to Nachem Avil, he knew. I said, how do you know me? He said, how do I know you? My wife, your daughter. Needs a vacuum. And Nebuch, the youngest son, Binyamin Zev, and his wife, they rented the first year after their marriage on Rehov Rav Chaim Berlin, right across the street from where we live. And Nebuch, they were killed, Arab terrorists in the Shomron. It's years ago already, but with the whole family. The grandchildren, the great-grandchildren, it's amazing. Some work within the system, some outside the system. When I went there, I've been in touch with Libby a number of times on different issues that we share in common. So she has grandchildren or great-grandchildren that they can only live with her. The police allowed them, paroled them to her custody, and they have to check in. So it's an ongoing saga of one family. I want to say publicly, I thank Meir. He had a great impact on me. That he didn't clone me is the way I've grown up, as I explained, as I'll explain when I come to the Rav. We each have to paint our own picture. The frame is halacha, devar Hashem, demands, commands obedience. But the picture we paint is the Tzelem Elokim within us. It has to be individualistic. And I have to state from Reb Henoch Fishman, I gained a great deal. Shanghai, went to MTA, learning Gemara. From Reb Meir, I gained a great deal. How to view the Holocaust, how to view the rebirth of the State of Israel, Russian Jewry, matters that became very big moments in my life. And this is the portrait of Reb Meir as I knew him, as I understood him. Parts of his understanding, I'm in total agreement. Others, Palginin Dibura, as I explained last week. But Meir has to be commemorated. He did a lot more good than some of the detractors indicate. A postscript on something I began with an hour and a half ago. The boy and girl issue is a very serious issue. We're living in a world today where on one website they showed invitations, Rav Yoshev making a wedding, Rav Kanyevsky making a wedding, and that they mentioned the name of the bride and they mentioned the name of the mother. Today it's become a mincha. They say Harav Shmuel Sakut v'Reyato. No name. It is shocking. It is against Torah. Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah, and let me give you a drop of history of Bnei Akiva at that moment in time when I went to Bnei Akiva. Shomer Hadati was the precursor to Bnei Akiva. And in Shomer Hadati, before World War II, everyone engaged in social dancing in the United States. If you read the memoir, the publication of Rabbi Herbert S. Goldstein's grandson about his grandfather, the famous Rabbi Herbert S. Goldstein, what is he called? The rebel rabbi, Mashu Kazeh. Wonderful, wonderful volume, worth reading. It brings the 20s to life, the 10s, the 20s, the 30s, the 40s. Has a lot of difficulty explaining how his very frum grandfather had social dancing in the West Side Institutional Synagogue. There's a great Rosh Yeshiva here, Talmud Chacham. His father, his father's first wife died when she gave birth to a girl my age. The father was desperate to remarry, raised this little girl. He went to a dance at the Young Israel in the late 30s, early 40s, and he met his second wife at Tzadeket. But that was the reality. Shomer, I'm not here to justify it, God forbid, but the attitude was, we're not going to rebuke them. It's like all the women in Lithuania, 60-70% didn't cover their hair. I can give you a long list, which I will not do publicly, of Gedolei Yisrael who came to America with their wives not covering their hair. And that was the reality. A lot has been written. I can give you sources. Sefer Mitzvot from New Haven, Rabbi Hurwitz, big footnote trying to justify it. The Rav, Rabbi Lichtenstein, my questions that I had, say that. In Shomer Hadati, they didn't do social dancing, but they did Israeli dancing where you held arm in arm, mahora, etc. Then there was a tremendous fight. It was after World War II. The Rosh Yeshiva from Europe came in. People were yelling, shouting, screaming. Bnei Akiva voted no social, no physical contact. And that was Bnei Akiva. The day I entered it, they boasted, we're not like Shomer Hadati. And this was boy and girl. This problem, how do we solve the problem, boy and girl, yet keep them apart and yet enable them to meet? This problem haunts us until today. And right here in the state of Israel, you have Bnei Akiva, you have Ariel, you have about another two offshoots where one is trying to be firmer than the other, but none of us have the ultimate key. How do we raise men and women, boys and girls, to be firm and yet to be able to meet socially? How do we avoid where all marriages have to come about through a shidduch system which today's intellect will not accept? It's not that I'm opposed to the shidduch system, but I'm dealing with the reality. We struggle with this problem until today. So I just want to mention that in relation to Bnei Akiva. Now the freebies. This is the latest of Rav Kook on Parshat HaShavua. I can't believe what they're doing. Terrific. If anyone wants, Yaron Reuven, Rabbi Yaron Reuven, one of the outreach, I'd like your reaction to this. I think the stress on Gehenim is not the way I would try to explain Yiddishkeit. But listen, they say he's a big star in America, and when Yosef Mizrahi can't show up, he takes his place. This is all in English. Yosef, he's native Israeli, but English is his real language. I wanted to give Yitz Rubin, this is an unbelievable picture of someone we'll talk about, that's Rabbi Yaakov Moshe Cohen Lesson, sitting next to the person who will become the seventh Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rebbe Menachem Mendel. That's before he's Rebbe. And this is the first real Rebbe in America who had a following who Vic Snow yet knew, the Biyana Rebbe. So this is at a wedding, and here we see, it's in a shul, maybe it's not a wedding, here we see the name Son which is my wife's family. So I made it, my wife sent this on to America to her cousin, my classmate, Normie Sohn. Who is this Rachel Sohn? Are we related? But what a picture. I don't know the other two, but look, Rav Lesson, the Lubavitcher, and the Biyana. Here's an article on Bugsy Siegel's daughter again. It makes big news. She had a Jewish burial. Chabad took care of it. Here's an article from the New York Times. The Rav is quoted as saying, I'm happy I won't be alive in the future because the shilas the Rabbanim are going to have are overwhelming. And here is one example. Woman with transplanted uterus gives birth, the first in the United States. Tell me, who is the mother? This is the surrogate mother. This is work, but now it's in the woman's body. Who is the mother? You have no idea what the shaila is. I go with the shita that whoever the egg comes from, that's the mother. But many disagree with me. There's no, what's the word we used in halacha? There's no hitgapshut. There's no crystallization yet. Here, it's twice this article was sent to me. Now, here you see Jews, but geniuses, but nishta brekel yiddishkai. Jerry A. Forder, New York Times philosopher who plumbed the mind's death, dies at 82. Very interesting what he's involved with. And here, a follow-up to that, New York Times, China's artificial intelligence advances help in its tech industry and state security. Do you understand what can happen? They can be watching every move we make, and you won't even know it's being watched, it's being recorded. This is amazing from New York. There's a movement that this is Israel's problem with the trains. When do you fix the trains? The solution to fixing the trains is, as I said, two ways to go. One way is to have a 4.5-day week, get rid of Sunday. We're wealthy enough, we're rich enough. And if you don't work on Sunday, it'll solve it'll help the Shabbos problem, and they can work on the trains. The other way is here. It's a disgrace. I was just in Rami Levi in Talpiot. The middle of the day, you can't walk through the aisles because they're putting out all the food and all the vegetables. Idiots! That's done 12 o'clock at night. In America, every shop right that's open 24/7 between 12 to 4 in the morning. The store is cleaned. So pay them what you pay for Shabbos work, 2.5 times a gemara. Now there's a proposal to stop the subways in New York between 1 to 4 or 1 to 5 so they can work on the subways like they're doing here. Makes sense? Halavai, we should learn. One second. Praise and alarm from American Jews over Trump's Jerusalem move. It's like I met some good people here in Israel, frightened stiff. What will be? Jerusalem, the country will fall apart. There'll be war on the streets. And I told this person, you live in Katamon. Rabbi Yosef had a brother who was a colonel in the IDF. Do you know that, Seth? Rabbi Vajra's brother. When it came to fight the Katamon, the brother was leading the attack, and Rabbi Chasva Chalila, we can't fight for Katamon. Where would we be today if we didn't have Katamon? And any baseball fan here, Aaron Boone, the new manager of the Yankees, New York Times, the New York Yankees now have three Aarons. Aaron Boone, manager, the greatest player, Aaron Judge, and the greatest fan, an idiot at his age, still rooting for the Yankees, Aaron Rakefe. And finally, I want to correct again what I said 2 weeks ago. You mentioned the sister of Chaim Potok. As I said, Rabbi Tzvi Sobolevsky is married to Chaim Potok's He is married to the granddaughter of Chaim Potok. Rebbetzin, Dr. Efrat Sobolevsky, is the daughter of Mr. and Mrs. Michael Samet, formerly of Los Angeles. And he describes the beautiful family she comes from. I corrected myself already. This is the third time I skipped the generation. My dear students, if anyone is interested, They think my name can raise money. I don't know. If anyone is interested in Ranana, I'm in Ranana next Shabbat. I'm being honored, but it's a very interesting honor. Talmud and Rebbe, it's an honor of yours truly and my Talmud, Harry M. Dura, who I brought back to Yiddishkeit through yutorah.org, and he's done a lot of good in Ranana, and this is for Shvut Ami. I'm speaking Friday night, Shabbos night, Sunday. Next Sunday, Monday, there are no classes. It's Hanukkah. We'll pick up after this. Now, tomorrow, Be'ezrat Hashem Yitbarach, we shift gears, and Rav Henoch Fishman is behind us, Rav Meir Kahana is behind us. Tomorrow is Rav Aaron Cutler, Kletzka, Lakewood, Rosh Yeshiva. For tomorrow's shir, kedai to go to mikveh before the shir. Vahamei vin yavin. Until we meet again, in health and happiness. Thank you so much. Take the freebies. Das v'danya.